Podcast Land. Welcome to Blackanese Chicken. I am your host, Rhett Thompson, and I am so very glad you took this moment in time to download and spend with me this time you have right now. Oh, thank you so much, each and every one of you chippies, for supporting the podcast, listening, checking it out, spreading the word, letting other people know about it. Hit me up on social media on Twitter, at Blackanese Pod, BLACKANESEPOD. Also at Rhett Thompson, RHETTTHOMPSON. Also email's good, blackanesepod@gmail.com. Want to send some big ups to a couple of chippies, especially hitting me up with those sweet tweets. That's my new tweet. Sweet tweets theme song. Let's see how long it lasts. Anyway, at Lavinia, she be show enough. Lavinia, she be show enough, actually. It's a really cool podcast. Check it out when you get a chance. It's really cool. She's also moderator of Black Podcasters United Facebook group. Really cool group if you are a fan and lover of podcasts produced and hosted by Black people. Group founded by the esteemed Ellen James White. Or if you're interested in starting your own podcast and you happen to be Black or person of color or supportive of people of color, she really really cool sweet tweet. This podcast is one part laughs, one part life lesson. Thank you so much, Lavinia. I really truly appreciate that. Really truly. That really touched my heart. Really, truly. That's my heart warming. Just like the Grinch who stole Christmas. You remember when his heart grew three sizes? I mean, my heart is already reasonably sized. I don't have a large heart or some type of heart defect. But I'm just saying, this is the glow that I'm feeling. Anyway, also at LadyRow46. LadyRow46 tweeted, "You tell such great stories. You almost made me cry when you were talking about your mom. Hashtag great daughter." Oh, that was in reference to episode 41, Bicycles and Accidents. Thank you, Lady Row 46. That, and actually, if you are a lover of podcasts or want to find out some new shows, follow at Lady Row 46. She is a big listener of podcasts. And she, if you follow her, you will probably find out some new shows that you don't know about before. She is a great discoverer and listener of said podcast. So definitely follow her, listen to her if you want to be in the know. So thank you so much. Thank you. Big ups to both of you for that great feedback. All right, so this is where I'm going to be challenging the hashtag great daughter. Podcast. I just came back from chaperoning my daughter's fifth grade class trip. More on that later, but I've been gone for several days. Gone, but I felt this need to record, to produce this episode here. Major thanks to all you chippies out here who have been listening. The last couple of episodes were episodes I had recorded. I recorded some time ago, but I never released out into the world. Finally edited them out and put them out there. So this is probably the first episode in a little bit that I, about 2 weeks or so, that is fresh and new, and not in my laptop, living, waiting to be born for you. Anyway, I've been gone for several days on this trip, so I'm trying to get back in the swing of things. Part of being back in the swing of things is getting back into the routine, waking up, making my 4 cups of American coffee, pouring a little bit of non-dairy creamer in there, drinking it. Then recording. That's what's supposed to happen. What happened this morning? I made my 4 cups of American coffee, poured it into my tall silver and black travel mug, went to reach for the non-dairy creamer from the refrigerator, and then my mom, the old lady, the lady with cane, "Oh, we don't have no more cream." I was like, "What?" It's too early for this.
We don't have cream. You gone. I, you know, no money go to store, so no cream.
I was like, that's not what I want to hear. That's not what I want to hear, old lady. What happened? No one can go to the store. There are no stores. All the stores got sucked into the ground while I was gone out of this house.
No cream. You can use milk.
I was like, I don't want to use milk. I'm lactose intolerant to milk. Why would I use milk? If I could use milk, I've been using milk all this time instead of non-dairy creamer, my sweet Italian cream, my hazelnut. I've had to do without. You know how hard it is sucking down 4 cups of American coffee, black, straight, when you used to having a little something to take the edge off? So I'm a little edgy right now. Can you tell?
So I'm sitting here right now trying to recover from this trip, drinking my 4 cups of coffee, burning this incense. Oh my God, this incense is so delicious. I'm not a huge, huge, huge incense person. Kind of that's like a college thing or something. Then you get away from it. I don't smoke weed, so that's probably another reason why I don't meditate. I don't meditate. I mean, I pray, but I don't do all those rituals and stuff in order to pray. I just say, yo, what up, God? Life is killing me. Or sometimes it's more like I'm driving with my eyes open, like, thank God you gave me this day. I'm seeing this beautiful sunrise. This is amazing. I know I be messing up, but you still be looking out for me. That's how my prayers go. I'm very unorthodox that way. This incense is intense. There's this African chick, one of the parents at my daughter's school, that has been selling this incense. She'd be hooking me up these gigantic boxes of incense for like $5. And I'm always buying out her lavender and her sandalwood. I don't know, something about like lavender. That's my favorite plant. I love it. It's so soothing. You got to get the right type of lavender. Sometimes people put too much of like the oil in it and it stinks. But this is like the right mellow type of thing that's relaxing. I usually burn that when I'm about to take a nice shower. And this sandalwood, I love it. I don't know, something about it. It's got some creamy undertones. I don't know how to describe it, but I love burning it when I'm recording. So I feel hyper with the coffee and mellow with the sandalwood. And probably is what is going to help me have a scratchy throat. I swear this incense sold by an African chick, apparently manufactured in India. You know those people ain't paid well. I don't know what kind of regulations they are, but I swear to God, in 40 years, if they tell me I got lung cancer, I'm going to know what the source is. It's probably going to be too late. You can't sue anyone over that, can you? I have the lung cancer because I didn't smoke cigarettes or weed. It's because I burnt a lot of incense when I was recording a podcast. That would be jacked up. People would just like, well, why didn't you just smoke weed while you was doing that? Why didn't you just do that? You might as well. You're going to go down anyway. No, but I like the way, I like watching how the smoke goes up. Oh, it's very, very hypnotizing. End of the school year is right around the corner. I gotta catch up to this African broad. At my daughter's school, it's kind of like, it's a really, really high-ranked public school. This is the best that I could do in terms of my economic situation. There's some really good... Florida, in general, has a terrible reputation for public schools. Terrible. So you got to be really careful where you put your kid. If I had money and means, I would put my daughter into a private school. But because I came up through the public school system, there's a huge chunk of my heart that I feel like I need to keep her in a public school. Plus I'm broke, so I can't afford it. Can't afford to put her in a private school. But the school that my daughter goes to for this area is one of the best in this area and one of the best in the whole state of Florida. So it's a win-win. So most of the kids that go to my daughter's school, the majority are Latin because we are in Miami. So they're Cuban, they're Argentinian, they're Mexican, whatever. And there's some black people, but the black people that go there, most of the black people that I have seen, they're not African American, they're Africans who live in America. And my daughter's friend's mom is definitely one of those. And it's so funny because she's a very involved parent, and I think that's why the school tolerates her walking around with a big shopping bag full of incense trying to hit up people. To buy incense. You know you ain't supposed to be selling no incense on the school grounds. This ain't no sanctions fundraiser. You can't do that. But she get away with it. I don't know. I can't blame her. At first I was like taken aback because I'm like, you selling incense? What? Is there no shame? I'm like, dang, I know that the Africans are very enterprising, but Jesus. But this is some good incense, so I ain't gonna hate on it. I am obviously enjoying it. Can't hate on her. And then I'm like, well, the woman also has like four or five kids. She's married, but four or five kids. Hey, you gotta hustle where you can, right? You gotta hustle. I think some of the parents, some of the Latin parents, they disapprove. So she's really good about like hiding her little shopping bag of incense. But I'm like, yo, psst, psst, psst. Yo, you got that sandalwood? You got that sandalwood? I gotta catch up with this woman right now. Burning some sandalwood with my little incense holder, smoke wafting out, taking me back to really cool places, giving me flashbacks. Bloop, bloop, bloop. Flashbacks of when my mom used to smoke. It was very comforting. I know smoking itself, not comforting, but thinking about myself as a little kid in Ohio, yes, I said it, Akron, Ohio, in our little house, 942 Lovers Lane. My mom's sitting there in the dining room in her recliner. Why is her recliner in the dining room? Because she had adopted the traditions of the African Americans in our lower working class, upper poverty neighborhood, in that all her furniture from Japan was in the living room. No one sat on it unless it was Christmas. And then we got to sat on it for like a little bit for half the morning while we opened presents. And then we had to get off of it until the next year, or if someone died and they were coming to our house to mourn with us, which was rare. So my mom's recliner was in the dining room, which was more like a family room. I mean, we ate in there, the television was there. Anyway, my mom would summon me into the dining room. My mom, really cute in a crazy, sexy, cool kind of way. She was short, 5 foot. She had this really long, luxurious, straight black hair. It went all the way down her back. She would be wearing these little shorts, and she would be sitting on her recliner, just chilling, 1 foot down on the ground, the other one propped up so the foot was on the seat. So it was like the right foot was up, her arm draped over it. She would take a long, long, puff, inhaling, then exhaling. She didn't spit when she did that. I just didn't know. I'm not a smoker, okay? She didn't sound like a dragon lady either. I was like, okay, third time is the charm. That's as best as it's going to go. She would call me into the dining room and tell me,
okay, you take these $3, you buy me cigarettes. Cool or Benson Hedges.
Benson Hedges in the green pack. Menthol. I told you, my mom hung around black people. That's what they did. And there I'd go as a 5 or 6 year old going down three, four blocks to the Arab store buying cigarettes. Because obviously no one was going to bother a 5 or 6 year old with $3 in their hand buying cigarettes. No one thought that I would get kidnapped, because apparently black kids in my neighborhood didn't get kidnapped. So I would go buy the cigarette. Didn't get carded. Who's carding a 5 year old or 6 year old? Different times, people. Different times. Back then that was called running an errand. Right now they would be called child abuse. It's all about wordplay. All about wordplay. See, this is why I love semantics. Semantics, the study of words, the meaning of words. What is abuse? What is abuse? Back then, someone was abused if they were like, As a child, well, we all got hit. We all got hit. So we would consider getting a whooping. That's what we called it, a whooping, or I guess they now call it a switch, or beaten, or corporal punishment. That sounds better, doesn't it? Corporal punishment sounds so legal and such authority given out. Not somebody's parent acting out of rage telling you to get the belt, get the blue suede belt with a silver fish buckle on it so they could beat your beep. And you see, that's different. That's corporal punishment. I guess abuse, we thought child abuse meant that, you know, your head was smashed through the wall type of thing. I did know people whose heads did get, you know, dinged up on the wall, but that was because they were probably running from their parents with the blue suede belt with a silver fish buckle on it, and it was your fault because you should have just sat still. Hitting too close to home. Maybe. Flashbacks, probably. Anywho. Semantics. I love semantics. Semantics. The study of words. Fell in love with the study of words. The meaning of words, really. Semantics is the study of the meaning of words. Fell in love with that as a ninth grader in the Upward Bound program at the University of Akron. Upward Bound, federally funded program, helping poor, black, first-generation college-bound students like myself get to college, achieve their dreams, get a career, be able to support their families. Somewhere along the line, the dream is deferred. But anyway, I had a teacher named Ms. Dunn, a roly-poly white lady with a bad haircut, who got me to fall in love with black literature and semantics. What do words mean? The difference of what words mean, depending on how they're applied. See? Child abuse. Errands. Same shit. What's in the word? Anyway, digress. Anyway, let me see. Bloop, 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 bloop. There was a reason why I would bring it up. It'll come. Don't worry. Just rock and roll with me, people. Anyway, look. This wouldn't be happening if I had my cream and my coffee. I'm just saying. Anyway, update. I'm still working on that theme music. It'll get there. Anywho, so the last time I left y'all in virtual real time, I had bought a video camera because I had some goals. I'd reset myself with some goals that I wanted to do in terms of comedy. I perform comedy, stand-up comedy. That's my thing. I do this podcast also, but comedy is that's my big thing. Got some things I want to do. And part of the things I want to do this year, I'm trying to submit myself to certain venues and certain activities and other things. In order to do that, I figured, let me purchase this camera. I got to start getting more videotape of myself. All that. So, one of the things that was happening locally down here in Miami, where I reside, is this contest called Ultimate Miami. Ultimate Miami. Apparently, this is a contest that they've had for the last several years, where they try to find the ultimate Miami singer, ultimate Miami bartender, ultimate Miami drag queen, and ultimate Miami comedian. It's pretty much a contest. Whoever's the winner gets the money, and you get the chance to perform on the same show as a nationally known headliner at this casino. So, generally, as a rule, me myself, I don't enter contests. Not because I'm a snob about it, it's just that I'm an extremely competitive person. So if I go into a contest, I'm in it to win it. If I put all this time and effort into it, I'm in it to win it. I'm going for the jugular, just for you to know. I mean, I'm not going to cheat or anything like that, but I'm going to put my heart and my soul and all of that into it. But comedy is very subjective. I know this also. There's a side to me that is very competitive, you know, very alpha wolf. Let's get the biggest bison, take it down, gnaw on its neck, let everybody know that you have slain said bison and now your entire pack would be fed. Let everybody know. But then there's a very sensible side of me that's like, okay, comedy is subjective. Everything is not for everyone. The analogy I like to give to people is, to me, comedy is like a buffet. I enjoy buffets quite a bit. I enjoy quite a few foods on said buffet. That's my thing. But I know when I go to a particular buffet, like let's say a Golden Corral, look, maybe that's a little too low for you, but for me, I'm like, that's good. I'm good with that. I'm a good Golden Corral patron, you know? I know that when I go into Golden Corral, I'm going to start off with a spinach salad. Somewhere in the middle, I'm going to have some of that fried catfish with the fried okra. I'm going to have the turnip greens. You know, have some other sides up in there. I'm probably going to have one of them yeast rolls. And at the end, I'm going to cap it off with some macaroons, maybe some fudge. You know, I might vary it up. Those are pretty much my basics there. Those are the things that every time I go into Golden Corral, that is what I eat. Maybe I shouldn't be telling you this, because what if you're a murderer and you poison the fried okra? That's a risk I'm going to have to take. It's delicious and it's breaded, and I know it's not the best for me, but in my mind, I tell myself I'm eating vegetables, so whatever. Those are the items that I go for again and again and again. However, me, myself, I look at the carrot and raisin salad, I'm like, ugh, gross, who's doing that? Why are they eating that? Why is that on the buffet? But apparently there's enough people eating that carrot and raisin salad that it stays on the buffet. And that's how I feel about comedy and performers. Look, you might not enjoy XYZ comedian who is selling out Madison Square, or you might not like that guy who's starring in a big budget movie or on some cruise ship somewhere. But somewhere out there, enough people like that person that they have a career. And that's how I see myself. And that's how I see contests. You know, when you're doing a contest, you don't know what the judges are looking for. It's subjective. I used to not think that way. Many moons ago, many, 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 many moons ago, you know, I would see when it was very rare. I think I can count on one hand how many contests I've entered, and I'll still have fingers left. So I haven't entered too many. But you know, I used to think, oh my God, you know, I did win this contest, or I did really well in this contest, and even the judges told me that they thought that it would be ridiculous if I wasn't chosen, and then I didn't get chosen. And then it was like, oh my God, I'm so sad, so depressed. What does this mean about my life? What does this mean about my talent? Am I going to be stuck here forever? You know, very melodramatic, very melodramatic. But yo, it just might, it has no bearing on your talents. It's just, well, it could be. Some people do suck. So I shouldn't say that. Some people are not as developed yet. That is the right word. Not quite as developed. It's okay. You know, they'll get there. They'll get there. Anywho, I pretty much, because of my ultra competitive spirit and also being like, it's very subjective, I pretty much withheld myself from participating in contests. However, this year, because of some of the things that I would like to do, it's kind of sort of leans into contest territory. So I told myself, look, I have to learn how to perform gracefully. I have to learn how to lose gracefully, you know, not set myself up for failure, but just, you know, you still have to, you look, if I was going out, if I was so fortunate enough to be on a show or in a film that was nominated for Emmy or Oscar, and I was one of those people who got nominated for Best Supporting Whatever, Whatever, you know how they put their faces on the screen, and the Best Supporting Actor goes to, blah, 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 and it's not you? I wonder, how many times do those people, like, practice that face of, like,
not you cannot show utter disappointment on national TV, nor can you show, you know, that RBF, that resting bitch face look either, looking like you're hating. What, I am going to look like I'm hating on Meryl Streep? No, you're not making memes of my face. So, same mentality. I told myself, look, if I'm going to start putting myself out there, I have to start learning how to lose gracefully. So when this contest popped up, I was like, well, it doesn't make sense to like go across the country to do this. I could be doing this right in my backyard. I don't have, it's not like I'm traveling far for this. It's right up the road. Let me do this. So I signed up for this Ultimate Miami Comedian Contest. Basically, you chose one of a couple of performance dates. You're supposed to go up there for 3 minutes. You do your thing, and at the end of the evening, the judges pick a couple of finalists. Whoever of those finalists of those different shows, I think it's like a total of 12 maybe, they end up competing and win $5,000. And for this year, get the, quote, chance to open for Carlos Mencia at Magic City Casino. I didn't really care about that. I mean, $5,000, yes, I'm not going to lie. I wouldn't mind winning $5,000, especially mama's hurting. You know, $5,000 would not hurt, you know, in this time and place. And opening for Carlos Mencia, and you know, I mean, it is what it is. You know, there's certain people I would like, oh my God, I would love to open for him. But with Carlos Mencia, you know, I'm not hating on Carlos Mencia, but it's like, you know, I'm, you know, it's like, you know, it's a professional opportunity, whatever. But my main focus is, can I lose gracefully? Just because I didn't think that what I do would necessarily appeal to a, quote, mainstream type of judgy, audience-y thing. I don't know. So, I went to the contest, I did my thing, and I had a good set. I had a good set. We had 3 minutes, but I did a good set. Whatever I did in the 3 minutes, I felt very good about it while I was on stage, and a lot of times when I'm performing, I can feel it if it's not going as well. Sometimes it's just very harsh self-criticism, but I just told myself to just be in the moment, just do what you do, do the best you can do, and they're either going to like it or they're not going to like it. And I feel like that attitude, it's come a ways, I've come a ways to get to that point of saying, look, I might be the fried okra to you, you going to keep coming back again and again, or I might be that carrot and raisin salad. You might say, why is this even on the bill? But either way, I'm going to be the best that I can be. The more you know. No. And I did good. I did good. I know comics are generally supposed to, I'm not supposed to say that, you know, I killed her, but fuck that. I did good. I know when I did good, damn it. I also know when I suck. I did good. And I guess it paid off. Because they decided to, I guess it was like 25, 26 of us that competed. And they chose 3 people. And they called 2 names, and I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. And then they called mine. And that felt good. Got up on stage. Dude gave us $100 on the spot. I was like, what? I knew there was money involved. I thought I was going to catch a check that I was going to have to hold and hope it wouldn't go bounce. Nope. Cash money. Took a picture, put it on Instagram. Oh yeah, you can hit it, see it on Instagram under my account at the skirt, THESKIRT. I'm cheesing really big and I'm holding $100. So, and then, so after the contest, me and the other finalists, we were interviewed because
I get, well, from what I gather, they actually, not only is it a contest, it's actually a reality show where they package this whole thing. Ah, my God. Oh, my God. I remember a couple years ago, I actually did a contest, ironically, at another casino. And same setup, you do the thing, and then you're finalist, and then you win some money, and then you get to open for someone, blah, 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 blah. And I remember that it was really weird conditions. Everything was extremely bright. I think it was very bright because we had a disproportionate amount of people of the geriatric set in the audience. I don't think when the casino was not trying to risk this room being dark and all these canes, all these people tripping on each other, whatever. And I just remember looking out into the crowd, and instead of playing to the people or performing for the people that was really getting me and really digging me, for some reason, I zeroed in on these two people in the audience. There was this white woman, a kind of heavyset white woman with a very jowly face. Like, her face, her cheeks were like a bulldog, like a white bulldog. Like, you know, those old Tom and Jerry cartoons, their Spike with a very jowly face. Her face was just like that, except she had flame red, bottle red hair. No one's born with hair that red. Definitely flame red hair. Her, and then there was this older white guy, white or Cuban dude, wearing a yellow cardigan, and he had like a golfer's hat. And I swear, I will never forget it. I zeroed in on them, and I was like, I gotta make these two nuts crack. I'm not getting nothing out there. And the more, it's like, instead of focusing on the people that was getting me, I just had to get them two nuts to crack. I could not get them nuts to crack, and it was like, I could feel myself flailing in the water. It was ugly. Yeah, I proceeded to, I don't want to call it bombing, but it wasn't pretty. Yeah, I knew it was bad when I got off stage and other comics wouldn't look at me in the eye. I was like, oh, shit. I've done that. I've done the, I will avoid you looking you in the eye because I don't want to have you acknowledge that I have acknowledged that you really did not do well out there. Also, I don't want to catch whatever it is. Whatever that made you bomb, that I don't want that. That could be contagious. I don't want that rubbing off on me. And then come to find out, because I was talking on this other comic, I was like, ugh, and he was like, yeah, that wasn't good. And I was like, yeah, man, I just felt like I had to make them two nuts crack, man. I just had to make it happen. I just had to. And he was like, I don't even think these two people know that they're even here. And it was true. It was true. I think the woman and the gentleman, I think, like, I saw them leave, and they left with an entourage, not like a cool hipster Ocean's 11 type of casino entourage. It was more like there was like a Jamaican nurse, a Filipino aide. You know, it was like the guy had dementia. I was like, oh, God, never again. Never again. We weren't going to have that replayed at the Magic City Casino in my 3 minutes. Not if I could help it. This incense smells so good. I gotta make sure I hit up this African chick before the school year ends so I can get some more of this stuff. I gotta stock up. Stock up for the summer. Definitely. Man, okay, so I go to this meeting at the beginning of the school year. My daughter, fifth grade, which marks the end of her elementary school career in Miami. So, the beginning of the school year, we have a meeting with the teachers. They tell us how fifth grade is going to go down. The activities and the classes and how homework is going to go and how testing, and there's new testing. And then at the end of the year, the fifth grade is going to take a trip to St. Augustine, Florida, and to Orlando to Disney's Animal Kingdom. St. Augustine, Florida is the oldest continually inhabited city in Florida. So there's a lot of history and good stuff there. Luxury motor coach, all-inclusive. Hotel, meals, sightseeing, tours, even down to the shirts that the kids are going to wear. Colored-coded shirts. One for each day, so we'll know whose kid belongs where. The most that you'll have to, the kids will have to pay out of pocket, I don't know, $20 per day for spending money for souvenirs and whatnot. How much does this cost? Several hundred dollars. I'm like, okay. Now, I'm given this information at the beginning of the school year. Beginning of the school year, I was struggling. It was a struggle. But I was like, okay, but this is an important thing. I don't want my daughter to miss out on this. It's not even about the keeping up with the Joneses thing. It's more of a, you know, there's always, and maybe this is one of the things I got from my mom. If it's something that deals with education and that enrichment, then I want my kid to be part of that. Several hundred dollars. Ouch. What are we going to do to make this happen? And then to top it off, the teachers explained, oh, we'll also need chaperones for this trip. We need one parent chaperone per three kids. Because right now, we're not exactly sure how many kids are going to end up on this trip. Right now, we're going to select 10 chaperones. 10 chaperones. And then as more kids sign up for the trip, then we'll be able to add on more parent chaperones. My daughter is in this meeting, and she tells me, Mommy, why don't you be a chaperone? I'm like, you know, I'm already, like, thinking dollar signs. Cha-ching, 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 cha-ching. Like, and then to do a parent trip, and the parents have to pay just as much of this as the kids, if not a little bit more. So I'm like, but then I was thinking, okay, we're in a room full of kids and room full of parents. What are the odds? What are the odds that my name is going to be one of the top 10 picked? Oh, and who got picked number 4? Me! So I'm like, okay, now I've committed to this, and I can't back out of it because my kid is looking at me like all happy, like, oh my God, my mommy's going to be a chaperone. I'm like, oh, and all these other parents are giving me the side-eye hater look like, oh, I wanted to be a chaperone. Like, I'm like, okay, I got to figure this out because now I've committed at the beginning of the year to basically drop in almost $1,000 for this trip. And I'm struggling to get some bills paid and the rent and the roof over the head and my car at this point had not started screwing up. So at least I got that in my corner, you know, but I was still paying off my mom's first loan on this, the car situation. I'm like, oh, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? What are we going to do? And, you know, automatically off the bat, there was other parents who were acquaintances of mine, like mild acquaintances, like our kids are cool, so I guess we have to be cool type acquaintances. And they already said off the bat, oh, that's too expensive. I'm not doing that. Blah, 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 da, 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 blah, 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 blah. So I'm like, I can't listen to the negativity. We got to make this happen. And then the teachers say, hey, we're going to be doing some fundraisers. So that should offset some of the cost of the trip. And the other thing is the kids are going to be able to sell candy. And my antenna go, bloop! Tell me more. All right, so basically, depending on what part of the country you're in, you may or may not have this, but it's the world's finest chocolates. You know, the chocolates that are kids have those big cardboard boxes of candy, and each chocolate bar is $1. Yeah, you know, they're the ones who usually hit you up when you're at the grocery store, or if you're waiting in your car, or if you're on the subway train platform, and they say, excuse me, can you support my basketball team, my football team, my church youth group? I got chocolate for $1. I got milk chocolate, I got dark chocolate, got hazelnut, got almond, got crispy, got caramel. Could you spare $1? I was like, oh my God, we're going to be those people. We're going to be those people with the children that people avoid because they don't want to spend $1 for the candy. But I was like, well, Tell me more. I ain't got $1,000. So they basically said, look, each chocolate bar costs a dollar. There's 60 in a box. If you sell a box, we'll give you 40% of the proceeds, and that will be deposited for your children's trip. I was like, ooh, I guess we're going to be selling a hellified lot of chocolate. And even with that, those parents like, I ain't selling no chocolate. I was like, sign me up. Where do I get this chocolate? I need it now. Oh, man. And the thing is, it's like, I was like, look, I don't know how this is going to happen, but if it gets to the point where we're sitting in the hot floor of the sun, stalking people, we're going to make this happen. You can't have no shame in your game when it comes to your kid. If I got this Nigerian broad selling incense, what's with me stopping this candy thing? And almost immediately, I was thinking about my mom. My mom, when I was in fifth grade, yeah, it was fifth grade because my mom didn't start working regularly until I was like sixth grade. So fifth grade, oh man, I had this huge, huge fascination with hip hop. Loved it. You know, loved the music. I even had a boyfriend. Not that you really have a boyfriend in fifth grade, but my boyfriend. This dude named Smokey. Smokey could rap, and he could human beatbox, and he could break dance. He could do all that stuff. It was like a whole package. And the thing about hip hop, you know, it's from the streets. The streets is watching. You kind of have to have a little bit of money to participate in this. You know, do I have money? Do I have a tracksuit? No, because that costs money. Do I have the Adidas? No, because that costs money. Do I have a Kango? No, because that costs money. Do I have a big Dookie gold chain? Oh, hex no, that's not going to work. No kind of gold is going to happen. So what's one thing that I could have that would represent hip-hop that would be one of those things that you could kill many birds with one stone? Like, you could have it and it would represent hip-hop, you could listen to it and it would represent hip-hop, and you could produce it forth from said speakers. You know it, a boombox. I was like, oh man, what I would do for a boombox. I would love a boombox. That would be cool. But it just seemed like one of those things that was out of reach, you know? My mom at that time, you know, she was still doing like little odd jobs, like a lot of like under the table type of things. Like, she worked at this laundry, this dry cleaners. Like, she would work the night shift doing tailoring. And it was rough because, first of all, it's the night shift. Me and my sisters were still very young. And my mom was always kind of leery about leaving us alone at night. And it was hard work. And they was paying her cash. And sometimes they weren't as consistent. Because that's what happens a lot of times when you have somebody who doesn't speak English as well as they could. And you paying them cash anyway. You know, you kind of, you know, you may or may not forget to pay them. And then my mom, she would do like, she would have these yard sales. Some of it was stuff that we had, and some was merchandise that people would donate to us that we would sell on the weekends. And then one day my mom was kind of hit by this idea because, you know, even where we're from Akron, Ohio, what? Even our upper poverty, lower working class neighborhood, you had a house, and most people had a very good sized yard. So you usually had folks, usually young men or boys, knocking on your door in the spring and summertime, asking you if they could cut your grass for maybe 10 bucks. You know, 5, 10, 15 was pushing it, you know, in those prices in that neighborhood. But could they cut their grass? And my mom was struck on this idea of like, well, if they asking people to cut grass, I could do a better job than this. She started offering her neighbors she could cut their grass, which is almost unheard of for a woman to cut somebody's grass. Not a boy, not a teenager, not a out of work man, but my mom was cutting people's grass. And it was crazy because, like, in our neighborhood, we had some older black folks, and they took her up on it. And there was this one white guy, I'll never forget. My neighborhood on the southeast side of Akron, is when we first moved there, we still had white people, a good chunk of white people in the neighborhood, because it used to have a lot of Eastern Europeans living there because they were there to work in the rubber factories. Akron, way back when, was known as the rubber capital of the world. We were the ones that manufactured all the tires. So the companies, Goodyear, Goodrich, Firestone, they were all based there, and that's where the factories were. And those companies wanted their workers to, of course, live near the factory and, of course, develop loyalty amongst them. So the factories, the owners, the companies built houses, affordably priced homes near their factories. And so even today, in Akron, there's entire neighborhoods that are named after these factories, and we don't even think about it because it's just such part of our the landscape of the land, you know. But there's an area called Firestone Park. There's another area called Goodyear Heights. So my neighborhood was not part of that, but we still had quite a few Eastern Europeans who they're older. They basically either moved. You know, once that whole redlining thing, when black people could move in the neighborhood, they start moving in, the neighborhood start changing, or the white people start dying out. And one of those was a neighbor named Paul, and he was Polish. His wife had died some years back, and my mom offered to cut his grass. And the thing about Paul was, you know, in the beginning, she was just cleaning his house. She was cleaning his house because, you know, he needed help doing woman's work. And I just know my mom, like, well, Paul was her best customer because he would pay her consistently on time, and it was a good amount of money because he had a very big yard. But the main thing was that he refused to let her cut his grass with her red Toro lawnmower. He felt that the gas-powered lawnmowers would destroy his grass. So he made my mom cut his grass with one of those old school lawnmowers, the one that the push kind. It has the two wheels and the blades that go f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f. So my mom is cutting this man's grass in her shorts and her long hair, pushing it back and forth. I'm like, you know, and now looking back, I'm like, I wonder if he really got off of my mom cutting his grass. But my mom was like, you know, whatever, we need money. So my mom was like supplementing her income, you know, cutting grass, doing these yard sales, even flipping, like back then we would get the government cheese, the government blocks of butter. I know that's such a cliche now, you know, but they did make the best grilled cheese sandwiches with the big blocks of cheese. I wish they would bring that government program back. But my mom, you know, sometimes it would be too much. They would give too much cheese, and maybe that's why they don't have the program anymore. Too much cheese and too much butter. There's only so much you can do with that. And so my mom would sell the cheese. I'd be like, "You want that butter for $5?" It would be a whole lot of butter. You know what I mean? It was good butter too. But selling that to people who couldn't make it out to the church or the food pantry for these dang on cheese and butter giveaways. So anyway, I really wanted the boom box, but it just seemed like one of those things that was out of reach. And one day at Glover Elementary, they gathered all the students into the gym for this presentation. And they said that it was a fundraiser. If we sold XYZ items, we could get this frisbee. But then if we sold more items, we could get this t-shirt. And if we could sell this many items, we could get blah, blah, blah. You know, and it goes on and on and on. And I just remember the top two prizes there was this set of headphones. It was one of those headphones that like already had the radio built into it with the antenna. And then the top prize was a boombox. The shiny black boombox. And I was like, oh, wow. And everyone was like, ooh, ah, ooh. So I remember I went home, ran home with these flyers, right? And I told my mom. And my mom looked at the flyers. And she looked at the catalogs. And she looked at me and she said, I'm going to get this for you. But first, it was up to me to start selling these things. And man, I don't know what it is about school fundraisers. But it's got to be a racket because it is the most horrible nonsense. Like, who sells this stuff? Who comes up with the stuff and says, you know what? I bet you this upper poverty, lower working class neighborhood could really love some summer sausage, cheese balls, cheese and crackers, and Christmas ornaments that are shaped like, they look like ceramic teddy bears singing Christmas carols, but look, everyone, the bottom of their little coats, their Edwardian looking coats, their little legs are poking out. Those legs are going to be loose, and that is going to be the bell part. So it's really, you get a teddy bear and a bell and a Christmas ornament all at the same time. Say what? This is going to fly off the shelves. All those people in Southeast Akron are going to need one of those. So here I am, shy, self-conscious about stuff, and I'm trying to hit up neighbors. Their houses that I never go into. These are houses I would just pass by on my bicycle, and now I'm like, oh, this could be a potential sale. But I couldn't just work up the nerve to, like, knock on their door and say, hi, could you buy this? Yeah, I kind of need to have you place this order, and then in 6 to 8 weeks, if you remember, I'll come back with this Christmas ornament, and then you pay me the $6 for this ornament. No, not interested. Okay, bye. For some reason, I was not racking up sales. My mom was like, okay, this is going, we're not getting the boombox. This is not going to work. So my mom, she had a friend, one of those friends, a friend that like always said that they loved her. And she would like kind of give them the side eye of like, okay, you love me, then give me money. No. Oh, that is like a recurring theme. I dated a dude once, and he was like, wow, your mom talks about money a lot. That must be an Asian thing. And I remember telling him, no, that's a broke thing. When you don't have no money, money and acquiring it is heavily on your mind. In fact, why don't you get that on your mind so we can make this shit work between the two of us? It's not an Asian thing. That's a broke thing. Anyway, my mom had this friend, and he lived in, at the time, was an upper class project. It was recently built, these Spring Hill apartments. It was like, I want to say it was either 14 stories tall or 16 stories tall on the west side of Akron, which was predominantly black at the time. And it was a nice complex because it was on the hill, all this one big high rise, had a pool at the bottom, an outdoor pool. So that was like very fancy, shishi frufu. And it had like a couple lower level high rises, you know. And my mom, you know, she would help dude, you know, clean his house, wash his clothes, and then she knocked on every single door in that apartment complex, drumming up orders. And don't you know, my mom filled up that entire sheet with orders. I don't know how she did it, because my mom's English was not strong, and a lot of those black people were not terribly educated. I could only imagine my mom being,
okay, you buy for me.
Oh no, she, no, my mom, like, you know, when she's not having an old people moment, my mom is an extremely nice person, like extremely nice, like so nice that she could be pushy. Like a nice pushy person. Like she knows how to push people into doing what she wants them to do. She's very persuasive. All the way from,
oh, you think I'm pretty? You think I'm cute? Okay, let's date. Okay, I need money.
Dudes be like, okay, you're really cute. Yeah, she sold all these items to all these people. And I remember it was so much that I had to get a second sheet. It was so much that when I turned in the sheet, that I believe one of the school counselors actually had to drop off all the product to our house. It was so much stuff she had sold. And I remember it took us about almost 2 weeks to distribute all the items because we had to take all this merchandise across town, you know, either by waiting for her friend to get it together because he was an alcoholic to remember to pick us up, to take us across this to his apartment complex so we could deliver all this stuff. And then, of course, there would be some people at home and some people not home, and some people would forget, like, what? When did I order from you?
You order summer sausage.
Collecting money. And my mom, she's a very nice person, she's a very pushy person, but she is definitely. If she was a different gender and a different race, I swear to God, she would be a loan shark. She would be breaking knees because she was doing the equivalent of verbal knee breaking. People would be like, "I ain't ordered this." Yes, you did. People were coughing up money, and I'm telling you, out of all those orders, and I'm talking about there was like maybe 250, 300 orders out of all those orders, I think maybe we were short $13, maybe. I think it's because the woman either moved away or she died. It was one of those. My mom did not play when it came to collecting her money. So I go back to school with all this money. Time had passed. I'd almost forgotten that the fundraising, that the deadline and all of that. I remember hearing on the announcements. You know, okay, you kids who sold blah 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 blah, come on down to the gym, pick up your prize. And our number one seller for this year. And they said my name. They said my name. My mom, number one. Number one. We had gotten every single prize that was on that fundraising list. And see, this is the thing. Like, now when my daughter brings home fundraising stuff, it is utter crap on there. It starts off as crap and then it ends with something like unattainable. It'll be like, oh, hey kids, you want to, like, they were selling. There was one fundraiser this year. I was like, who chose this? Who lost their mind? It was frozen gumbo. Like, really? I'm going to buy frozen gumbo from a 10-year-old? No, thank you. Packets of gumbo. Like, you're supposed to reheat this stuff. No way. No, thank you. Not even for my own child. I wouldn't even buy that for her. And it's like, hey, kids, you sell 5 packs of gumbo, each pack of gumbo being $18. Buy 5 of them, get this rubber sticky hand. I'm like, are you serious? This is some crap that I could have gotten from one of those quarter machines that you see outside the supermarket. You put the quarter in, you turn the knob, and then you get that weird plastic bubble. You open it up and you get that weird sticky hand. I was like, are you serious? You want me to sell $100 worth of gumbo so you could get this crap sticky hand? Forget it. It goes all the way, sell 5 packs of gumbo at $18 each, all the way to selling 200 packs of gumbo, and you'll get this iPad. I was like, really? Who's selling? Who's buying this much gumbo? Nobody. Nobody. Quit tricking these children. I just remember I got that the it was a box full of prizes. There I was, fifth grade, had this big heavy backpack on my back full of books, because my mom made me bring home every single textbook every single day. Even if I was like, I don't have homework, you bringing it home and you gonna read it anyway. There I was with that, and had this big old box with the boom box and the headphones and the t-shirt and the frisbee and all this other filler gifts. And I remember getting it home and taking the boom box out of the box. It was all shiny and black and had red trim on it. And I was like, oh, wow, let me hit the on button. Click. Nothing. Because I didn't realize you had to have batteries. And we had to go get like 8D batteries. Oh, but don't worry. There's a power cord. Okay, let's plug it in. And then click. Fight the power. 93.1 WZAK. That was the R&B hip hop station at the time. And that's what. Oh, I was so happy. I was so happy I had that boombox. And my mom was so happy to get it for me. And like for years, my mom, we would look at that boombox and my mom would say,
"You proud of me? You proud of me? I got that for you."
I said, "Yes, I am. Yes, I am." And I kept that boombox for like, I think I had that boombox until I was about 10th grade. Because by 10th grade, my mom was like working consistently. And my mom said, "Okay, I buy this for you." She upgraded.
This time it was out of money that she had saved, because she had worked her hands to the bone getting me that new boombox.
And that old boombox, you know, by that time, you know, technology, you know, had gone to the wayside, you know. But sometimes I wish I had saved it to remind me. You know, this is what people do. This is what you'll do for your children. You'll set your pride aside and knock on every single door of a housing complex begging people to buy some prepackaged food because you want to get something for your kid. So I told myself, look, I ain't got the money for this trip. I ain't got this trip for me. But if this is what we're going to do, this is what we're going to do. So, dang on it, we're going to sell the heck out of some world's finest chocolate. And it got to the point in my day job, people was like, "Damn, how much chocolate do you have?" I was like, "Look, we're going to sell some chocolate today. You're going to eat this chocolate. I don't care if you got a nut allergy or not. You're going to buy this chocolate." Ain't no shame. Ain't no need to have no shame in this game. Ain't no need for that. Because I was like, we're going to pay for this trip. It was so, and the thing is like, you know how there's certain traits, they skip a generation. I told my daughter, I said, "Look, this is what's going down. This is what we got to have happen." And my daughter was out there selling that chocolate to them neighborhood kids. She was selling that chocolate. She was selling that chocolate so good that kids, we still got kids knocking on this door like we a damn trap house. This ain't no trap. What you doing knocking on my door for?
You got some chocolate?
No, we ain't got no chocolate. Fundraiser over. We done with that.
You got some chocolate?
You gonna have to wait till next year. So then I feel like we should go to BJ's to buy chocolate anyway, just so my daughter could keep hustling. But my daughter, she got that hustle, man. She got that hustle. She was asking me, "When we gonna go door to door so we can sell chocolate?" I was like, I'm tired. You better sell to them kids. Make them like it. And dang on it, she did. She did. She got that hustle. She got that hustle. I'm very proud. Very proud. I'm just glad. And let me tell you, we sold so much dang on chocolate, it paid for my daughter's entire trip. I did not have to pay for my daughter's trip. Ain't that something? Paid for her entire trip. My trip, not so much, because chocolate sales only go to kids. Me, I had to struggle and get that together, but I did it, because that's what you got to do. That's what you got to do. Ain't no shame. Ain't no shame in it. So I'm glad that I went on that trip. Learned some things. I'm a big I don't want to say history buff, but I can get down with some history. There's been many a time where I had a choice between watching something on Comedy Central and watching something on History Channel. I flip to History Channel, especially if it's a really good documentary. I'm into that. I watch PBS. I ain't got no shame, because I'm grown. I'm grown, I can tell you that. I enjoy that. So I enjoyed our trip to St. Augustine. Learned some things. St. Augustine, oldest inhabited city in Florida. One thing that is interesting about this. All right, so I knew that Florida originally belonged to the Spanish. Didn't realize that the Spanish back in the 1500s had tried over the course of 50 years trying to make St. Augustine and Florida work. Couldn't make it work. Florida has no gold, it has no silver, it has no treasure. Florida is full of swamps and alligators and mosquitoes and hot burning sun and hurricanes, rainy season, no air conditioning. And so the Spaniards were pretty much going to give up on Florida. But then they discovered, as they were going back and forth from the more profitable areas that they had conquered, like Mexico and Central and South America, dealing with the Aztecs and the Incas and getting all their gold and their silver and their precious stones, that as they would swing up from those countries and loop around Florida, they discovered, the Gulf Stream Current, which is pretty much like a river in the Atlantic Ocean, that would take them right up to where they needed to be up in Europe, and it would cut their travel time by weeks and weeks and weeks. And St. Augustine, which is in the northeastern part of Florida, is a perfect spot for them to refuel and get more supplies and to catch that Gulf Stream Current. So they needed to keep the area. They needed to keep it in Spanish control. What I found interesting, this was all new to me. I mean, of course, I know about the Spanish and I know about them with the silver and the gold and all of that. What I didn't realize is how overly populated the St. Augustine area was of pirates, which I guess makes sense. If you know that there's a couple of ships laden with treasure, who's not going to get a piece of that? Okay, so I get it. Isn't to the point where St. Augustine has a really cool pirates museum. We're going through this museum, we're learning all this history, and you see all these different portraits on the wall, and you learn about Blackbeard, and you learn about, Captain Kidd, and all these other folks in history. And then I'm like, what's this portrait that's on the wall? Sir Francis Drake. Now, I can say that I have an affection towards Queen Elizabeth I. I have a thing for strong women in history. And you can read up on this on your own. There's a bunch of movies about Queen Elizabeth I. The whole struggle of her getting to the throne, keeping the throne. She's King Henry VIII's daughter. She's a Protestant going against the mighty Catholic Church, how all the other countries in Europe hated her because they thought that she was the bastard queen, that Mary, Queen of Scots, was the rightful queen, the Catholic queen, how she was an enemy of the Spanish. And, you know, maybe it's one of those things because I am coming from the American side, which is related to the British side of history, you know, Queen Elizabeth I. I side with her, you know, and as they say, the victors get the spoils. The victors in history, the ones who are victorious, are the ones who get to write history. So, in all this time when I've been a fan of Queen Elizabeth I, I learned about Sir Francis Drake. He's the one, the mighty admiral who helped destroy the Spanish Armada. The Spain, they were known as the conquerors of the New World. They had their ships, their mighty warships, and Sir Francis Drake, through ingenuity and craftiness and strategy, was able to destroy the Spanish Armada, which left their kingdom in ruin and tatters and financial bankruptcy or whatnot. And he was able to be knighted, the Sir part, one of the greatest people in English history. Fast forward, bloop, 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 bloop. I'm in St. Augustine, I'm in this pirate museum, and I'm saying, what's up with this picture of St. Francis Drake? And our tour guide proceeds to tell us, well, according to the Spanish, St. Francis Drake was known as a pirate. Pirate, because he was known for robbing the Spanish ships. That's piracy. I never thought of Sir Francis Drake as a pirate, because the way history was been presented, he was like Queen Elizabeth's savior. And then I grew to realize, oh, this is where semantics come into play. If you're the Spanish and you have this gold and this silver on these ships and you're just trying to make your way to Spain, and then some guy is stopping your ships and taking your gold and your silver and your treasures from you, you're going to call that guy a pirate. And what is a pirate? According to Merriman, a pirate is someone who attacks and steals from a ship from sea. Which makes sense, right? According to the Spanish, that's what Sir Francis Drake was. Sir Francis Drake, our hero of Queen Elizabeth. Apparently, Sir Francis Drake was such a known enemy that he had a nickname, El Drake. El Draco. Latin for the dragon. I was like, oh. That's not what I think of when I think of pirate. When I think of pirate, I think of someone who's very dirty, with one patch, maybe with a crippled, hobbed leg. Someone who is a thief and a murderer. But I guess if you're a Spaniard and you have a ship and it gets robbed and maybe some people get killed in the process, well, the person who has done this to you, that would be a pirate. Correct? Correct. What's interesting is that during the same length of time, in this time of St. Augustine that we were visiting, I also heard Sir Francis Drake being referred to as a privateer. What is a privateer? Well, this definition of privateer says, an armed ship owned and officered by private individuals holding a government commission and authorized for use in war, especially in the capture of enemy merchant shipping. Oh, how can you not love semantics? Is Sir Francis Drake a pirate or a privateer? I guess it depends on what side of history you're on. It was just very eye-opening for me. So I was thinking about this. You know, I know that I mentioned this earlier in this podcast. Like, my mom was a hustler, you know?
She was a hustler, baby.
Because that's the person that's going to do what they need to do to get money, right? So in the same vein, I'm thinking about this several times, not only in this episode, but in others. I've referred to my mother as a hustler. If we're thinking about in the same vein, I couldn't help but look, okay, let me see what that definition is. That definition is an aggressively enterprising person, a go-getter. Second definition, a prostitute. Now, I've always thought, or I always kept in the back of my mind, the definition of hustler as in somebody who's going to scratch and survive in order to scratch and survive. So I think of it as a positive. But if I look at some of these other definitions, floating around means someone who knows how to get money from others. But it just seems so negative, right? But somehow,
I'm a privateer, baby. Doesn't sound as good as I'm a hustler, baby.
Privateer just sounds so sanitized. So sanitized. Granted, look, I'm an adult. I'm not naive. I know that my mom, as well as many other women in our neighborhood, hey, maybe sometimes you gotta take an L for the team or other continents. But it makes you wonder, like, you know, what will you do? What will you do for the survival of your children if you're of a certain economic class with limited education, limited means, limited on so many other ways? It's very easy to look down on people and say, oh, well, they could do better. They should do better. They can do better. They just better themselves. It's easy to say that. It's easy to be one of those parents with the Michael Kors sunglasses, Michael Kors handbag, and the Juicy Couture jumpsuit, looking down on the woman selling the incense. Or summer sausage. Trying to get a boombox for their daughter. It's easy to say that, right? I guess it depends on what side of the coin you are, right? What side of the story are you on? I'm a hustler, baby. I'm just going to digest all of this. I need more coffee. I think this is a good enough time to end, don't you? I think so.
I'm a privateer, baby.
Alrighty. Hit me up on the social media and let me know what you think. Remember, there is no me without you. Until next time,
see ya!